Giddy up.
Well, without further ado, let's get this thing started. Hello, and welcome to Shop Talk, a podcast about front-end web design, development, and anything else you send in through our contact form. I am Dave Rupert, here with my co-host Chris Goyer. Chris.
Hi, everybody.
And today, Chris, do you want to introduce our special guest? Because
I don't really know him. We have the full Triforce on today. As you know, my co-host on this Shop Talk Toe, Dave, is from the Austin-based design shop Paravel, and now we have all three of Paravel on today. It's our second five-person show. We got a bunch of guys on here. So Trent Walton and Reagan Ray, thanks for joining us, fellas.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, was that just like Austin hospitality? That's what, or are you just known each other so long, or was it planned?
That's Texas hospitality, sir.
We have this restaurant in Austin called Mighty Fine Burgers, and whenever you walk into it, they say, "How you doing?" And you say, "Oh, I'm good. How about you?" And they go, "Mighty fine." And so there you go.
Austin, it's like part of the employee handbook.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, and the restaurant's called Mighty Fine, so
I get busted by it every time. I'm just
restaurant
like,
is called Mighty Fine.
Yeah,
it all makes sense now.
It'd be like all if right. you went into Five Guys and there were five guys working there. All right. Okay.
Life's little moments.
Hey, well, thanks, Paravel, for coming on the show. I guess, Trent, Reagan, do you guys want to talk about what you guys do at Paravel? Just give people who don't know you a frame of reference.
Go ahead, Reagan.
I'm the lead designer at Paravel, but if you had to describe my job, I'd say I like to draw stuff.
And I'm Trent, and I answer emails in Basecamp. It's the truth.
It's the truth.
It's funny and true.
So Basecamp,
any deal with Dave and I?
It must have been a deal when they switched Basecamps on you then, huh?
Or we didn't switch.
Oh,
I know I'm a curmudgeon about switching things and adopting new technologies, but that's, I just can't read it. Can't comprehend.
Classic for life.
Yeah, I think, I might get that tattooed somewhere. Classic Basecamp for life.
Oh, life. I didn't know. That's the first I've heard of that. Mostly people are like, you know, fawning over it. But not, I guess not people that are, well, maybe I don't.
Maybe I have crappy taste.
I don't use it, so I can't comment. But that's good to know. There's balanced opinions in this world.
Man, I'm getting a whiff of hot drama right here, but let's move on.
Oh, Dave is very sensitive to hot drama. Stephen Emlund wrote in, and he just had, and this was a while ago, but he had one of these questions that turns into like kind of a like a I'll just do it. I love to hear more about web forms, best practices as far as layout/markup. Should I wait for HTML5 validation? Use JavaScript now, and all that stuff. And he's just, you know, how do I make good forms on the internet? And I was like, just. Because these are the questions I was asking before I found Wufoo. And, y'all know I work for Wufoo, right? His forms are a pain in the ass. It's turning into a weird ad. But I, like, do ads for Wufoo because I just love it so much. And it just comes out that way. But it's like if you are having trouble with forms and, like, on all the complicated crap that is forms, just use Wufoo and your life will be much easier. That came out like an ad. I work for Wufoo, so full deal there. But I don't know, Steven. I'm sure you wanted to hear a better question than that. You're trying to learn the technology behind it. And I'm just like, use a service. So I don't know. Maybe I'll put some links in there about forums, but I just kind of wanted to turn that question into a little show starting sponsor thing. And thanks, Wufu, for letting me do this show during the middle of the day.
We really appreciate it. To empathize with Steven, I've been finding myself like, I would take a class on forms. Like if somebody was like, pay me $100 and I'll tell you about web forms all day and the best thing you could ever do with them, I would do it. So yeah. It probably costs more than $100, huh?
But, they power the internet.
I think it's a specialized field, even within our specialized front end field. They're cool things.
But. I know. People, you always hear these weird stories about be like, oh, we removed one field from our form and it made us $30 million or something. You're like, what?
Yeah. It's an art. Brother. It's an art form. Well, I got a. We'll cover some news and links in just a bit, but I got a question that was sent in from Mark Roberts. He's asking, why did the widget cross the road? To get to the other aside element.
Where's the rim shot?
Oh, darn it.
This totally needs a rim shot.
Let me try it again. Why did the widget cross the road? To get to the other aside.
I just watched the Muppet movie. That's where that's from. That's Fozzie, right?
Yeah, that's Fozzie Bear.
Awesome. Well, all right, we got some news and link stuff. I think Dave put most of these in this week. I'm not familiar with most of these.
Yeah,
so, maybe the last one, but you start it. Kick us off, man.
I'll kick us off. Remy Bach, chat room listener, after the show last week, we were chatting around, and he showed me his tiny to medium-sized jQuery plugin called Super Labels. We'll put a link in the show notes, but it's on GitHub, jQuery.superlabels, speaking of forms in form design. But it's a label that, you know, that label trick where you set the label over the form, and when you focus on the form element, it disappears. Well, his does that, except it'll slide over to the other side of the form. So even when the person gets like a few characters in, then it disappears. So it's kind of like they have context the whole time until they finally.
That's nice. So placeholder attribute kind of does that, but as soon as you start typing, you lose the context of what it was. So if it says first name and you start typing, you're like, oh crap, what was I supposed to put in this field? With this jQuery plugin, you'll still know. You don't lose that context right away. That's the point, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it's a cool cool idea, cool implementation. So. Yeah, and it uses proper labels, like labels, not just placeholders. So
right, because placeholder is not a replacement for label; it's more like a hint.
Yeah. So that was cool, and so big props to Remy for putting that out and sharing that. So we have two things, and they're sort of similar, but let's talk about them. Did you guys see Type Butter? This kind of made the rounds. Did you guys see this?
The reason I saw this is because Eric Meyer posted something and he was like, I don't know, he mentioned it for some reason about how the elements that they use. They use spans, I guess, but really it would be nice if they could use the kern element or something, like make up an element to do it.
Yeah, actually, they did. It's basically like lettering JS, which
A Paravel
adventure.
Full disclosure.
Adventure. Yeah. it's like that, but for kerning pairs. So it'll go through and wrap pairs of letters with it's not a span. They actually made up an element called the kern element. So they wrap it in the kern element, and which is not a thing. So this could turn into hot drama for me, but. So it wraps it in a kern element, and then you can kind of, you know, negative margin or letter space each kerning pair based on whatever font you're using. So yeah, it's cool. I get mixed feelings on like fake elements, because like the picture element.
So which it we does talked, make a fake element.
It does make
an element called kern, and it wraps it in that.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay.
And so, like last week, we talked about Scott Gell's picture element, which I will go on record as saying I think it's pretty cool. But you know, it's interesting when we start introducing these not real things, or even those like CSS classes that are totally fake that like your JavaScript thing uses in a CSS file. Do you guys have opinions on that? Do you guys feel like those are cool, sort of weird, maybe don't do good for web standards or what? Anyone?
I think like with letter, all I know really is relating to lettering, but I mean, we even said it's not the ideal solution. We're flooding spans, and you know, it shouldn't be used extensively or whatever. But I mean, I think that also paves the way for, if I think discussed in the right way, it can pave the way for progress. I mean, we've about, you know, being able to specify a letter within an post on it. What is it? A call for nth everything?
Right.
So, you know, it's almost like how you frame it. We need tools to do the job today, but we want to make sure that those tools don't cost us, you know, crappy practices in a month or 6 months or a year. So,
yeah,
totally. Well, and in lettering JS, you made the choice though to use span. You know, the mm-hmm. element isn't the Dave Rupert element or whatever. It's a span, which is a real element. And I guess
we tried the Dave Rupert element, but it melted browsers. They just broke.
Yeah, it was mostly unfunny all the
time. Apparently there is a way in HTML5 to kind of invent your own element, which is what this Eric Meyer article is about, where it says you literally use the element, which I didn't even know was a thing. And then there's an attribute of it that says extends span, and then you give it a name attribute, and then you can use spans within it, only you give it the is attribute of what you called the name of the element. It's really bizarre and it doesn't solve any problems, and I just am completely confused by it. But apparently that's the like official HTML5 technique for making new elements, which aren't even new because you have to use a span anyway. I don't know. I'll link it up in the show notes, but that is weird, and it's a little weird. The picture thing is weird too, because picture is not a real element yet. It's not spec'd out. It might be. It probably will be, but it's not yet. And so now there's a polyfill for this element that you can throw in your markup that isn't, you know, that might change, you know, and now then there'll be a bunch of websites that are using a picture element, which is just not the spec'd out way. It's just weird. It gives you a weird little back tingly feelings, whatever the hell that is.
I call dibs on the elemental P element. I'm just gonna go ahead and call dibs on that. Okay. I want that one.
You got it.
All right, first dibs. Okay, next.
But the next thing, hit us up. Let's hear.
Oh
it.
No, the next thing is very related. So Adobe WebKit had a hackathon. Adobe had a WebKit hackathon, in which they like just kind of ripped open the WebKit source and made just played with it basically, and then built their versions. But some guy, and I saw this on Twitter, he's like, I'm going to attempt to like port lettering. And I was just like, what? And through this, somebody actually ported the nth letter selector into WebKit, which is exactly what, Chris, you were talking about. Trent, I think you've talked about it before too, is like, we have first letter in CSS. Why not nth letter?
Yeah. And so I talked to some, okay. So the, for one thing, I'd post a link right now, but apparently it's running an old version of WordPress and it's down on Adobe. No. Blogs.adobe.com is down. Anyway, there's a couple of caveats here. Once one nth child, you know, takes n, and you can do like a little formula in there, like negative n 3n plus 6 or whatever, and you'll get like the where that you know, you get it, right? Where n is 1, it will find that letter, it'll do the little calculation, get a number, and then find the letter that's that. And then when n is 2, it'll do the calculation and get that number and find the letter when n is that. This doesn't work like that. They hacked it and they got it working, but you can only do n or whatever, or even like or just integers. So you can go nth letter 5. And get the fifth one. You can't do the formula thing, which isn't that big of a deal because generally probably you'll use this in the same way that you'll use lettering.js, which is like cool stuff like, I don't know, making the making each letter different sizes or doing some kerning or making them wacky letters or whatever. You probably don't need a ton of formulas, but it's worth noting that it doesn't behave yet in the same way that the nth child formulas work.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's a cool way forward. And, you know, having Paravel on the show today, I thought it was really smart brand synergy to bring all these up.
Heck yeah, it's so cool. I'm glad that it's coming. And I talked with some other guys that said it wasn't even that hard. I mean, it's a little hard. I mean, it's cool that they did it or whatever, but it doesn't have the same challenges that even like First Line has. Apparently First Line is kind of crazy difficult. In ways like, okay, so you select the first line, and then so the browser figures out everything that's supposed to be on the first line, and then you increase the font size of it. That's legit, right? Mm-hmm. And then that pushes, now letters not as much down. Text can fit on that line, so it pushes some text down to the second line. And then that larger font size then doesn't apply to the last few letters because it's now on the second line, not the first line. So it like gets in this weird loop of like, apparently it's very hard to code is the idea.
Yeah.
And this has less of those problems apparently for some reason. Anyway, heck yeah, we still want it. Let's do it.
Oh yeah, we want it bad. And then we want words too.
Yeah, heck yeah, we do.
Yeah, we can wait on lines. I'll wait.
Right. I'd say letters, the most important one, and words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree.
Well, cool. Shall we? So on Shop Talk, we like to get listener submitted questions from listeners like you. Go to shoptalkshow.ask and ask any question you like. We'll try and tackle it. So, Chris, do you want to hit us up?
Sure. We have a bunch of Paravel ones, which is ideal because we have all of Paravel here. So they're tailored around that a little bit. And because you guys are actually a design studio, I put some of those in here too, because I think we get a lot of those, and I sometimes shy away from them because I don't have much experience with that type of thing. I know Dave does, whatever. There's some of that stuff in here too. Let's start the first one from Jorn Hookham. Have you at Paravel explored working on products as well as your own service-based client work? If so, what has that process been like for you? For example, how much time do you allocate and when? What do you like, dislike about them? That type of thing.
I guess I'll take this one as Trent. We haven't really gotten into what I'd call products. I think we have a bunch of ideas, but nothing that we've really, I think, and I could be that we've, as of yet, decided it deserves like a lot of our time and attention, but we have a lot of side projects. And I think that from the beginning it's been important for us to have things that aren't client directed or mandated so that we can, even just practice things we want to practice, learn about things we want to learn about and work on things that we really love. I mean, things like, almost kind of, the silly things are some of our favorites, like the many faces of, and things like that. But it's really a matter of just the being committed to get our work done, to serve our clients, to make sure we take on like a workload we're all comfortable with. We're constantly dealing with that, and then being committed to put these things, it's some priority in the middle where when we finish something, we can jump to something else that's an internal project or something like that.
Heck yeah. What's the closest thing to a pro? The many faces of just like kind of like a website, right?
Probably Goodfoot, huh?
Yeah, we did Goodfoot, which is an iPhone app we did, but unfortunately Goala doesn't exist anymore. So
that's right. Does it just not even work anymore?
Yeah.
Does it not work at all?
It might work, but it's not going to for long.
So. Yeah.
They're going to shut down their API and everything. There's been like rumors. I like to hang out with ex-Goala employees, but there's been rumors that maybe the data will get sold and like salvaged, but it's also possible it won't. So,
right.
Bummer. But yeah, Goodfoot was probably a product that we did, but
yeah, definitely.
We weren't dependent on it, actually. I'd add that it was more of a, like, you know, Dave got it and wanted to build an app, and we had a ton of fun. We just sort of wanted to do it for our own kicks. If it, you know, we wouldn't have been opposed to it, but.
And it was a lot of like coffee shop coding with Matt Thompson, who worked at Goala, now works at Heroku. So.
Nice. And then here's a question I'm seeing in the chat room. How can you get so many side projects done while still getting the bills paid? I'd have to confess that early on, we just didn't have as much work as we wanted. So we needed to do something to occupy our time. But to add to that, I would also say that the three of us, there's a lot of overlap in our talents and our skills. And so when we're working on a project or even two projects at a time, there's some natural handoff. So we sort of, you know, we'll all kind of get together and plan. And then when it's time for Reagan to design, I'll be involved in that a little bit. And then maybe Dave's less involved. So we sort of all have like a little bit of a break as we pass things around. And so that's when we sort of work on side projects.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think some people like are infatuated with the Paravel thing because you're like all friends, right? And have some like mutual respect. And so it's not like you just hired these guys off the street, right? Yeah, all you're, you know, but you kind of grew up together anyway, right?
Yeah, we've known each other a long time.
Sure. That's pretty cool. And I don't know. So there's probably less worry about, you know, like I've worked for little design studios before that weren't like that. That, you know, we're friends, but we're just exclusively only work friends. So I couldn't just I just have this idea and I'm just going to work on it today, and that would just not fly, you know.
Yeah.
We
were friends before we started, but developing a working relationship was a completely different thing. We still argue a lot, but I mean, I think the arguments at the beginning were a little more scary. I'd sort of remember Dave and Reagan would leave, and I'd be like, I wonder if they're going to come back. but they all, I think that through all that, I mean, I think that that's the deal. It isn't necessarily to kind of have a nice working relationship. No way is it about knowing each other for 15 or 20 years, as much as it's about like being committed to kind of sticking together. I don't think we were very good when we started. I mean, I think I actually had very little talent. I've since siphoned off from being like a really fortunate parasite. But to me, more than anything, it's just the fact that we decided, well, we're going to do this, and we're going to be together, and we're going to invest in each other and Paravel. And it, you know, it, every day it just seems to, you know, things get better and better, and things seem to be panning out. So,
all right. You haven't had to fire anybody.
No. If we fired anybody, it'd probably be Mr. Trent. when base camping becomes automated and things just happen, I'll be done.
The same Jorn wants to know about your, like, what CMS you use on Trent Walton. A lot of people want to know about your fancy blog, Trent, because you do these art-directed blog posts. So how do you inject this the custom CSS that you need to on a per-post basis? I guess is probably what they're actually asking, right?
Out of WordPress, love WordPress, and there's a WordPress like WP Art Direction plugin. Google that; it'll get you set. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. It's to me, I'm not getting the access to do that. It's figuring out what the hell you're going to do once you're in there. But it's been a lot of fun. I like blogging as much as I have time for.
That's interesting. That's what I use too. Not that I do as much of that anymore, but I got obsessed with it for a minute too. So there's a plugin and it just adds little boxes to the WordPress admin where it's like, put custom CSS here just for this post. And you're like, oh, okay. And it just inserts whatever you put in there in the head is really what it does. So you could write CSS in there if you wanted to, or you could just link up an additional style sheet if you don't like, you know, coding in text areas. So that's all it takes, folks. Oh, look, there's the in the chat room, folks, put it there. I love that plugin. I didn't know that's what you used. That's cool.
Yeah.
I also, on my GitHub, I'm going to self-promote myself. I have a better art direction plugin.
Yeah, but I didn't want people, you doing it. Now you're going to get questions and you're going to be support, Dave.
I don't want support. No, but it's the same plugin. Mostly, it's probably really bad. I shouldn't even mention it. But it uses the WP head instead of the art direction plugin uses a content filter like a old school PHP trick where you like check content and then you inject stuff. So
does it really?
Yeah. So this one uses like the WP head. So yeah. It should be more performant and cacheable.
Has it been a while since you looked at this?
It has been.
I wonder if the author of this Art Direction plugin is like pretty legit WordPress developer. I wonder if he's fixed that or if he just did a no-no.
Maybe. I think it uses like an OB filter or whatever, OB right. start. But anyway, I know what you mean. I'm just saying. I use WP head.
Nice. It's the right thing to do.
So, anyhow.
Okay, let's see what we got. I kind of want to. God, we're halfway through already. I kind of want to make sure we get to the fun ones. Yeah. But let's just move to the next one. I'd love to hear any insight you guys have. This is Greg Davenport. I'd love to hear any insight you guys have regarding project proposals, quotes, contracts. Specifically, how do you deal with situations where the client wants some functionality that is beyond your personal ability to implement? Do you buy plugins? Do you hire a programmer or what? So this sounds pretty base campy.
Nah, well, we hire friends.
Do you really? Can you just repeat that?
Sorry, we were working on an e-commerce. Am I cutting out?
No, nope,
just a little bit. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. We're working on an e-commerce site, and we hired Taito. Did I pronounce that right, Dave? From Austin, these two guys, Robert Bond, and they helped us finish that. So you know, we learned early on that you don't want to be doing things that you're not good at or you don't enjoy.
We found out that like if you have something you can't do, like yeah, you need to get some help. So,
well, your options are get help or say no.
Right? Yeah, yeah. In most circumstances, if it's like a plugin and if you know a plugin can solve it and it costs money, I would do that most certainly. you could get yourself into some trouble, but you're really if they're selling a plugin, then in theory they're offering support. They're offering, you know, it should be quality. So
I would think that'd be a no brainer. If it was just like, can you guys write a calendar application, or there's no way you're going to write it from scratch, right? You'd just be like, oh, here's this awesome thing that automatically does it. And we'll cater to our abilities, which is, you know,
well, we've hacked together a calendar. Poor Dave. And I mean, you learn the hard way that they want like Google Calendar or whatever they're used to with all this crazy functionality. I'll never get into things like that if you're not good at it.
Wow, I'm sure. Cause it's like, okay, well, we got it and we made this calendar and look, you can add events to it. And they're like, well, yeah, but how do you add multi-day events? And you're like,
there you go.
Hold on. Give me a week. And then they're like, well, how do you add ones that are every other day only when the moon is in phase? Damn it.
Yeah. It never ends.
And it's like, it repeats every Monday, every fourth Monday, but every like 12th version of that, it starts a half an hour early because Gladys has a meeting. So, and then you just have to figure out how to code that. And then that's at the point where you say, hey, Google Calendar's really good. You
should. And it's embeddable and customizable with CSS.
Don't think about
the wheel, peeps.
But yeah, I think if a client wants something, your best bet is to like figure out, like make friends in your local community. That would be the best place to start, or online. But and then figure out what skills they have to offer. In a lot of ways, that's sort of what Paravel is. We offer each other skills like that we don't have. Like I can't draw anything, so Reagan makes me look pretty in most occasions.
Does more ways than one. And everything.
Awesome.
That's good. We get questions from people that are like, how do I meet these people in my community? And I just wanted to say, just this weekend, I'm sure this might air after it's over. I'm not even sure. But I'm headed to Bar Camp in the lovely city of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania this weekend, which is a very large bar camp. It's like, I think we're expecting like 250 people or something to come. And bar camps are free, you know, and they're just so ubiquitous. So many cities have these things. Just look, just Google bar camp in the name of your city. It might even already exist. And that's kind of some of the, you know, there's always community events you can go to, you know, it might not even be bar camp. It might be something else, but that's where you meet the people that you can start to outsource stuff to, you know?
Yeah. We host a Dribbble meetup here in Austin with Happy Cog. And you can meet as many people there as you can fill a Rolodex with. And and just conferences, South by Southwest. I mean, there's tons of ways to meet people, I think. Mm-hmm. You just got to get yourself out there and, you know.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Go to events. You literally fill a Rolodex.
Okay. Literally fill a Rolodex.
We have this is one of those questions where we get like three of per week, no offense here, but to Kevin Jones, thank you for sending in this question. Please don't think that your question is in any way invalid. He says, hey fellas, I was wondering what your thoughts are on using HTML5 and CSS3 in client work. Is it something you're doing gradually, or are you using them as much as possible regardless of full browser support? It's just the classic question, you know, like, can I use it now kind of thing. But Kevin wants to know, like, everybody says yes, but it does change a little bit when you add clients to it, right? Because they're more sensitive to things possibly not working in certain browsers and stuff. Do you have the Paravel plan on that one?
You just said it. It's client to client. I mean, it's to me, it's less of a CSS3 HTML5 question, is more of a just a making sure the people you're working with understand what you're doing and are on board with it. So, you know, some clients know a whole lot about browser compatibility, and then a lot of ours don't know anything.
Right.
Yeah. We may have lost Mr. Trent here. Oh, there he's back.
Yeah, sorry. I had a call come in on my phone. Anyways, but like we've worked for clients who don't know anything about compatibility, and I'll just say, look, rounded corners, we're doing it this way. Cool? And they'll say, fine. So, you know, it's all about
honesty,
being clear. Yeah, exactly. Being honest, being upfront.
Sure. Oh, yeah. It's just becoming less of a big deal these days, isn't it? Because IE7 is almost out the door now, right? So we're just going to be, well, these conversations are almost at an end. Thanks, the internet, for getting
on. And when people ask for fluid layouts and responsive and stuff, that CSS3 really makes it very necessary. I mean, you know, if you imagine a button that you're slicing out of a PNG that has corners, I mean, it just gets stupid. So
yeah, I never thought of that responsive design is saving us in this way a little bit, because as soon as they say that they want that, then these other that other stuff is just
automatic. I work that angle. I mean, yeah, if they come to us for responsive, it's like a really just that it changes the whole thing for the better, I think, of course. But yeah, I use it a lot.
Okay. Cool, cool. One came up in the chat room that I think that I'd like to address just for a few seconds. Somebody asked about So Tanaka. So SOH is his first name, and then TANAKA. And I brought it up because a friend of mine, David Walsh, posted about it again today. I don't know if you guys remember, but on CSS Tricks, maybe a couple months ago, I literally had the domain name stolen, the ownership of it stolen from me. So, like, just without ever getting an email or a phone call or anything, if you did a DNS lookup, you could see that it was just owned by some other person. They were just able to somehow get in there and just steal the ownership away from me, which was scary and disastrous. And I found out through investigating, it wasn't just me. It was lots of different domain names. This happened to all in the kind of design blog sphere, which is a weird thing to target, I guess. And by this point, like 95 of us have gotten our domains back just through kind of in my case, it was actually GoDaddy who was really fought on my behalf and got it back, which was very cool of them. And it was not GoDaddy's fault to begin with, because there's probably six or seven different domain registrars involved that the origin was different in all cases. So anyway, I got it back, but there's one lone guy who's still fighting this battle and is not winning, and that's So Tanaka. And he had this blog, sotanaka.com, that had a bunch of cool jQuery tutorials on it. It was his personal portfolio. Really, you know, it matters as much as CSS Tricks matters to me. His name website probably mattered even more to him. Anyway, I wonder if there's some – I'm going to try and link up something in the show notes that will help us fight. The domain registrant that's really being the worst with him, and I don't even care. You're never going to sponsor our show. 1&1. You're the worst, and F off, because you need to work with So Tanaka to get him his site back. I am demanding.
Occupy 1&1.
Yeah. I just wanted to mention that I've never talked about that on the show. It's been a while, but we need to stand behind So to get him his frickin' site back. It's been like 3 months.
Yeah.
Team okay. So. I'm on Team So.
Yes.
Chris, do you have a sponsor here?
Yes, let's do, because they've been with us since really episode one. Lessmoney.lesseverything.com is the domain. Go check it out. It is a conference in Tampa, Florida on June 7th that's ran by Alan and Steve from the Less Everything guys that do a bunch of apps. They've had success in their business by kind of growing it and they do some apps and they make money that way, and they do consulting work and they make money that way. They're really killing it from all angles, and they're going to share kind of how they became a successful business and, you know, just how they can make more money, how you can be less stressful, how you can be a better freelancer. That's what this conference is all about. It's called Less Money, and it's down in Tampa, Florida on June 7th. It runs back to back with the Front End Design Conference, which Dave is speaking at this year, and I've spoken at in weeks in the past. That's Dan Denny's conference. He's also sponsoring this week. And God, we've gone too far since we've done a sponsor. Maybe we'll just do another one for free for Dan, because this conference I just talked about, Less Money, literally you can go to both of these in a row if you want to, and just make a little week out of it down in Florida. The Front End Design Conf.com is that one, which is at this amazing theater in St. Petersburg. It's just got the, it's like a, like you, they could do the Music Man there or whatever. It's this big, beautiful stage with these beautiful seats that people sit in. It's just a really, it's the coolest place I've ever gone to a web conference in. So those two conferences are both sponsoring Shop Talk Show this week. So thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. And if you go to Front End Design Conference, give me the secret Shop Talk Show handshake and, I'll high five you back, I guess, because we don't have any merch. Anyway, we'll figure that out. Anyway, moving on. Well, shall we go? We got a call-in question. Should we hit that up?
I would love to.
Let's go. Okay, this is from Joe DeLore, I think.
DeLorean?
DeLore.
Hi, guys. I was wondering what you think about specialization in our field. Some people want someone that's a jack of all trades, and other people view that as if you know everything, you can't be great at one thing. So just wondering where you guys stand. Thanks.
So that was Joe DeLore. It's just, I want to combine it with Norris Puckus's question below, who is just saying he looks around on AuthenticJobs.com, which is a really good job board for our industry run by Cameron Mall and crew. And he's like looking at different jobs, and he found one that was like, here's a random example from AuthenticJobs.com. We want someone who has 1 to 3 years experience in PHP, jQuery, MySQL, Drupal, WordPress, Photoshop, Illustrator, and if you have a little C++ and Objective-C knowledge, that's cool too. It's like, whoa, quite the laundry list there, guys. And Joe's asking about, like, is it better to know a little bit about all those things, or is it better to be really good at one of those things? Like, what's the deal? And I guess we could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, Reagan, you got anything on that?
No, I mean, even from a design standpoint, I think it's better to be good at one thing. Y'all can probably expound on that more on the developer side, but yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah,
I mean, agree with Reagan.
Yeah, go ahead, Trev. I was just thinking. I mean, that's. I think that's true. I also love. I think it's different when you're looking for a job, and then when you're part of a team. Like, there's a lot of. I feel like the three of us are in many ways kind of generalists as well. We definitely have our fortes, but the overlap is really nice. So it's good to sort of. I think you become more valuable if you sort, you know, if you get into a job and you're a designer and you know HTML, maybe you know CSS, or if you get in and you're a front end coder, you start to learn back end stuff, whatever. It's always good to, I think, build upon the knowledge that you have, especially with having, I mean, it's been wonderful to have Dave work with us because he's just got that kind of personality that he's always going to have to learn what's next and keep current. And so, you know, for Dave, he's saved the day so many times, not because of what he knew in 2006 and got like we realized we needed him for. It's more the spirit of like learning and kind of widening his skill set. I think the three of us are all like that though. So
that's a good point. So it's a little different on a team than it is finding a job. So here's the deal: if you're just incredible at PHP, right? You've focused all of your time on that, and you're extremely good and demonstrably good at PHP. It will not be hard for you to find a job, I think. You know, you can be like, look, I rock at PHP. That's going to get you in the door somewhere. But probably once you're in that door, what makes you more useful to that team is a broader scope of it's a little harder to sell yourself trying to get in the door at a place like I know a little bit about everything. They'll be like, I'm not sure that's usually not what people are hiring for. I don't know if for better or worse, but
I tend to be the generalist and kind of do a little bit of everything, but that it's true. You're like a master of none. You're mediocre at all these things. And
does it ever bug you? You know, you're like, gosh, I wish I was better at one.
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, you know, like I hang in Austin, hang out with some of the JavaScript crew here. Really, really talented folks, who like commit to really gigantic projects. And, and I'm just like, I make tiny jQuery plugins, and so it's somewhat embarrassing, but it's also like I'm probably a generalist, and they're really good at JavaScript. They're very in the specialized area, you know. So, my pro tip would be if you want to be a specialist, be a Node or JavaScript specialist. You'll probably make a bajillion near future, in the short term, but yeah, this authentic job post kind of cracks me up. It's sort of just like, we want like somebody who does WordPress and Drupal and can design and also codes iPhone apps. It's just like humorous. It's like, they really want to take advantage of you. So it sounds
that, or they really need like 10 people.
Yeah.
If they really want to do it well.
Yeah. So it's, but not to say those unicorns probably exist. So, but, and they're awesome people. But yeah, it's like, geez.
Yeah, but they're still going to be, I think they're probably still going to be better at a lot of stuff than like be good at a bunch of things, you know?
Right. So I would maybe focus only on
like even with you, Dave, I think there's still like, you have your strong points and things you're definitely really, really good at. Like, I think you're probably selling yourself a little short when you say you're a generalist, but
yeah,
that's what he does. He's a beta male.
that was a sick burn. Do you have a sick burn sound effect? Hold on. Maybe.
Oh, great job.
Oh, well, that's all I got.
Does it say great job?
Great job.
Did you record me saying that? That's it. Great job, no, Dave.
I need to put that in. I also need to make the laptop. I need to grab that guy. I mean, what happens when you're a generalist, and this is maybe for Joe, but you end up, you're like, dude, I do everything. And then like your brain says, hey, can't handle it anymore. So pare down. And so the pare down process can get tough. Like, you know, I mean, I've learned a lot of frameworks and languages that have frameworks or whatever. And at this point, it's just like, you surrender that knowledge so you can make space for new stuff, you know, be a little responsible with your brain. Like, we build a bunch of Cake PHP apps. Cake PHP is really great. Love it still. But like, now I'm moving them all to WordPress. I've probably said this before, but just for the sense, like, oh, if my life's a little less complicated and when I do PHP work, it's all WordPress for the most part, then I'm happy. So, yeah. Shaboom. Yeah,
I used to do that back in my design agency. It was like, we're going to, instead of like evaluate which CMS is going to be best for you, we're going to use WordPress for me because I don't want to have spread out across all these different CMSs. I hate learning. That's not true, but it is. But
Captain America hates learning.
No. All right, we got. Let's do. Gosh, we really only did the one sponsor thing. But seriously, guys, look into lessmoney.lesseverything.com and frontenddesignconference.com. Go to these things. Anyway, let's do another question. Let's do Gretchen Hines Ward, kind of a longtime Shop Talk listener.
Yeah, this is Gretchen's second question. She's Shop Talk famous, so which is a thing. I swear. Here we go.
Hi, guys. This is Gretchen Hines Ward. I was wondering how you handle HTML email. Is that something that you bundle with a web development package for your clients? And if so, how you handle that, how you make sure it's bomb-proof? Any advice at all would be great. Thanks so much.
Bomb-proof.
Our advice run is to let someone else do it.
Yeah. Maybe that's a cop-out answer, but it's the honest truth. We say MailChimp. We don't want to do that. So
you don't do emails at all. You don't even want to bundle it up, and you'd rather just be like, use the template. Okay.
Man, I don't want to test emails. This just sounds terrible. We did it early on. I remember we were like on retainer with a few small companies here in Texas, and I just remember testing these, and they were probably – it's just messy business stuff. It's like forms. I don't want to deal with forms. I don't want to deal with emails. It's not the kind of life I want to live. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Screw email. And yeah, use MailChimp. Wasn't MailChimp support this show? I'm going to make some calls.
Monkey on the phone.
Yeah. Monitor, whoever wants to give us the most money.
Yeah.
Bidding war.
It's a bidding war.
Money and design a custom like MailChimp template. I would just stick with a good, solid company that, you know, does it right.
Does that for a living.
Text emails, which is no shame in that, folks.
Yeah, I love
that. I'll give Gretchen a resource. This guy here in Austin, Art Thompson, he runs a shop called Logical Things, and he has a good post on, he had a slide deck called Coding Emails Like It's 1999 or something like that. I'll see if I can find it and I'll put it in the show notes. But he gives some really awesome tips about what you can and can't do because he's, you know, sort of been through the hell of coding an email. And I heard his talk maybe last year or a year and a half ago. And it's depressing how not futuristic emails are. So it's awful. Like, you have to use tables and then you have to inline all styles and stuff like that. It's miserable. So yeah. I would always err on the side of using
I remember something a while back, like Outlook was like downgrading the technology you could use in email and stuff like that. It seems like it's getting worse instead of getting better.
Yeah. You got to be really careful and don't overdo it on emails. Keep it simple.
Yeah. I mean, there's all, you know, whatever. Use a table, use inline CSS, you know, it's old school coding. That's just the way it is right now. It doesn't surprise me either. I mean, you can't go out linking to, I don't know. I'm not even going to talk about this. I hate it. We all decide we hated it.
Nobody wins with HTML email
or email at all.
Email, yeah.
Email, boo.
All right, let's try to do two more. Can we squeeze them in?
Yeah, sure. You bet. Go ahead.
This is how we'll get Dan Denny sent in a question. He is the organizer of Front End Design Conference, so that's perfect for us.
He's a prince.
Yeah, and he used to have, before he was, I think he's just Dan Denny on Twitter now, but in the long, long ago, I'm sure he's blushing right now. I hope you are. He used to have, his Twitter handle used to be Web Design Fanboy.
Ah.
But so anyway, I'm sure he watches Paravel with great interest, but he asks, can you give advice for how to grow in revenue and project quality while remaining a small team? Paravel seems to have done this very well, so I'm wondering if you have any tips, tricks that stand out from your experience, because you've always said, you guys, this is me talking now, that you're three guys and you're staying three guys, right? So you have this like small and we mean to be thing, right?
Yeah, we definitely want to stay small. We like doing our jobs so much. I don't think any of us are interested in just managing other people. I think we love the work so much.
Mm. Awesome.
Yeah, Trent. Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a magical, like, here's the way you can make a ton of money answer to that. Or I think it's just about staying passionate with what you do. And I mean, we also really have our long-term interests in mind. We're not just about like the short-term. So,
yeah. Like what we've done is we started and we took every job. And I remember the first year we were trying to, I knew how much money we had to make to stay in business. And we were, every month I'd wake up scared, and you take everything, and then you get better, and you feel like you do better work, you do it quicker, and then you up your rate because that makes sense, and you just sort of keep doing it. It's sort of like you have these growing pains of, oh wow, I'm really quick, I can't believe what I just got done in an hour, my hour's worth more. Well, let's up it. So every like 6 months or a year, we have these conversations where we change things, we or whatever, and just making sure that it sort of balances with kind of what we're giving and what the clients are getting. But you know, there's no formula. You just have to just keep it up, And, I would also say, talk to your friends who do the same thing. I mean, I remember I met like Josh Brewer and Yaron Schoen and all these people at like Matthew Smith at South By, and we've always kind of kept in touch. I mean, you sort of just guess at like what your time is worth when you start out. And then I think at this point now we have sort of a very clear sense, we really bid projects confidently, knowing kind of this is how long things are going to take. Here's the variables we're not sure about, so we'll make sure we have spans for that. So yeah, you just kind of got to get your hands in there, get them dirty, and get good advice. Ask your friends, get a lawyer, all that kind of stuff.
So. Do you have a number? Do you do it like, this project will probably take us 30 hours and our number is $150 an hour, whatever it is, is it more complex than that? Is it like a?
Say that again. I think I lost you.
That's okay. Pretty close. We do it in spans. We'll do like, this will take 30 to 50 hours, and here's our hourly rate. So yeah, no, it's really as simple as that.
Yeah, hours times rate.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you give some kind of promise, like what if it takes us 55 hours, we'll still we quoted you that, so we're going to charge you that.
No, we have in there. It says, very clear communication. If a client makes a decision or asks for something that we think will go over 50, whatever span, if it's 50 hours, we say, if we're at like 30 hours and they're asking for three more rounds of revisions or something, we'll say, okay, no, that this will be more time. So it's really
hourly rate,
we're hourly. We want to be paid for the hours we put in, and clients respect that. We've never really had any problems with it, and I think the only times we do or could have problems with it is when it's not communicated clearly and beforehand. You can't say, oh yeah, this took 100 hours, here's a bill. Or even, I try to do it days in advance, saying this is where we're going, this is,
and that's a lot of learning by trial and error too. Like, this is 3 years of figuring out that that's the best way to do things. We ran into, hey, this will take 30 hours, and then we spend 60 hours on it and get paid for 30 hours. You just have to, kind of figure out what works best, but that works for us. So
yeah,
that makes sense. It is, when somebody hires a design team like Paravel, it really should be part of your prerogative to be super upfront about how it works, right? Because it's different than going to a Denny's or whatever. All Denny's, you order something and there's the price right on the menu and then they bring you the bill and that's how much it was. But you hire a different design firm, they might charge in this totally different way. There's no industry standard on how design firms charge their clients. So because there's no expectation from client level, you have to explain it really well. Mm-hmm. So that there's no mystery.
Yeah, you have to explain it really well, and you have to communicate constantly, just so there's no surprises. Like Trent said, like if we go over our hours, they're going to know it. It's not going to be a surprise to them. So
mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it works out. It works out well.
Good. All right, let's try to do one last one and then wrap it up. Oh gosh, do you have a favorite of the remaining questions, Dave?
I don't. They're all my favorites, Chris.
Maybe let's do this last one because it's so kind of bizarre.
The audio one? The audio?
Lawrence, yeah.
Oh yeah, here we go. Whoa.
Hi guys, my name's Lawrence. I'm a web developer from Edinburgh in Scotland. My question is whether you think there are any topics in web development which would merit an in-depth academic study. I'm doing my master's project and I'm having trouble thinking of a topic which would be useful to the web development community. Thanks very much.
Oh man. So what, like good thesis topics? Do you guys, I think I have a few, but anyone?
Then you should start.
You should go ahead.
Yeah.
So I've just been thinking like, so we've, you know, encountered clients in the past that have said, oh, you know, we've been testing this like website against like a mobile site and people prefer the mobile site to, because it's, you know, loads faster and it has social or, you know, stuff like that. I would love to see, research in actual research in responsive web design and see if people can mentally adapt to this, or do people like go to responsive websites and they go, oh darn, like really good ones, not like really bad ones, but like do they get to them and they're just like, oh man, I wish I had the full site, you know? Or like, I would love to see like the stats on that, like kind of UX research on stuff like that. So
you're saying if a responsive site doesn't, it hides stuff, what the there is?
Or? Yeah, well, it could be just like different levels. Like if a responsive site hides stuff, are they upset? Or because, you know, we make a lot of broad assumptions, you know, mm-hmm. like, oh, yeah. like UX assumptions. You know, are people truly upset if we like just hide all the ads? The advertisers probably are. But like or like are users totally upset if we, you know, hide whatever, you know, the sitemap in the footer or something like that. Like what do users really want? I would love to see facts, kind of, you know,
and rather than like, if I do this, it's automatically better. I was at a SurveyMonkey meeting just yesterday. I think we were talking about sending an A/B testing an email. One of the emails is just how it just, we're going to design it for our regular size and whatever. And the second email is that exact same email, only with some additional CSS media query stuff to adjust things around for small screens. And the idea is like, are we going to get more click throughs, which is the like only metric apparently that matters in emails. And it'll be really friggin' interesting to see if you know, just applying specific design to make that email better is actually better, you know, because it might not be, you know, which would be so sad. But maybe anyway, I like that idea of, you know, academic research in the is responsive web design actually better in all cases, and what things make the biggest differences for real type of thing. Mm-hmm. You got any more?
Yeah, I got time. Hey, I'm an ideas man. Trend, like the vertical parallax sites or whatever, like do they sell more Nike shoes and cars, or are they just cool, or like, you know, anything. I just could go on and on.
So trends is one thing.
Exactly. Do they have legs? Are they, you know, what is like my grandma think when she pulls up Nike, A Better World? Like, is she like, this is really cool, I want a pair of Nikes? Or is she just like, I don't get it? So I'm just interested. I know like they're all these.
Because your grandma's things. Nike's target market.
Well, my grandma can dunk over a car.
Okay, fair enough.
So things that warrant academic research. You guys got any things that would make like a good paper? You know, like research this in depth.
I really like Dave's responsive thing. I think that there's actually millions of variables within that. You know.
Yeah, it's not whether it's responsive or not, but how is it? What does it actually change? Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, if somebody were to go out and do a ton of research on that, I think it would be really helpful and useful for a lot of people.
So we could start quoting that instead of just, it's probably better.
Yeah, I mean, what is my wife, who doesn't know the internet as well as I do, what does she think, you know?
Right.
Yeah, is she bummed if, like an image is 60K versus 20K, you know, like, yeah. Is she truly bummed? Like, I mean, we just assume they are because it's more, it's going to take longer. They're bummed, which is true, but it's like, how bummed though? Like not buying it bummed? I don't
know. Academic research would combine personal experience like that with real, because they would never say they're bummed, but they also might just go to a different website and the stuff.
Right. So he should start by making one of those scales with the smiley faces and the frowny faces, and it says, you know, point to how bummed you are, and it's like the Scoville unit for heat or whatever. I'm the really bummed. Scale.
It's the Rupert Bummer scale.
It really rolls off the tongue. My idea was, it's more of like a documentary. We all kind of know about standards and know that, like, I'm talking about web standards, literally HTML and CSS and stuff. We all know kind of how it went down. Like, we kind of didn't have them, and then people fought for them, and now we do kind of have them, and it's better, and everybody loves them, and the world would suck without them. But it would be, at this point, you know, there's some books you can kind of read about it, and lots of books kind of subtly touch on it in small, like chapter one might cover it in a passing way, and then they get into more nitty gritty stuff. I thought it might be kind of cool, maybe for a graduate thesis, but maybe like as a documentary or something that interviewed all the people involved, you know, while they're, you know, because the time's ticking here, you know, we don't want to lose anybody. We got to get everybody interviewed and really write down the story of how web standards went down.
Like Bert Boas, the inventor of CSS, he's old, guys. We gotta like document his whole brain.
Yeah, it's time to kick off a true investigation or whatever, so we can tell the story how it actually went down. That would be cool. I don't know if that's a graduate thesis because it's not a study; it's more just like interview.
A historical account of web standards would be awesome. Like,
yeah,
like put it on Kickstarter. I'll give it some money.
Yeah,
somebody should do it.
Uh huh. That's not me. But somebody,
yeah, not me. this is what I say when I don't want to do something. Put it on Kickstarter. I'll give you some money to do it. Go do it.
Lovely.
I would. Okay, that's a great last question, guys. So what we normally do, the how do they give us money thing, but Dave, you know, you can cover that, right? You just hire Paravel, I guess. But yeah, you better have a pretty friggin' interesting project or they're just going to laugh at you. I'm just kidding.
No.
They would never do that.
Which is true. There's like, there's only, we have to really.
If you have $1 million, call us.
Mm-hmm. They're looking for a million.
We'll find somewhere to put it.
Yeah. Well, so, Reagan, Trent, how can people follow you guys on the internet if they're not following you already?
Oh, I'm on Twitter at Reagan Ray. It's, my first name is spelled like the president, but my Twitter handle is spelled like the Reagan, R-A-Y-G-U-N. So there you go.
And Trent is Trent Walton.
Yeah, at Trent Walton. Trent Walton, just my name.
Perfect. Well, guys, thanks so much for coming on the show. Thanks, everyone in the chat room, for listening. And thanks, everyone who's sending questions. Keep sending them in. We love audio questions. Mm-hmm. Now we got to work on our outro music, Chris.
Outro music. ShopTalkShow.com.
Yeah!